As I said this morning, the morning class we discussed philosophy, and the evening class is going to be story time. So, we're discussing from the sixth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, and this morning we discussed a good part of the first chapter. That chapter is a synopsis of what we discussed is Maharaj Parikshit wants to know from Shukadeva Goswami what can be done to prevent a person who just by having a body inadvertently is going to make some mistakes. And those mistakes will have some reaction, the reaction will be some suffering. And there's a place of suffering. So what can be done to counteract what can be done to prevent that consequence of having to suffer? And the answer is, there's successive responses that are given. The path of fruitive activities that counteract adverse fruitive activities, and that's dismissed as not, it's capable of neutralizing reactions for bad activities. It's not capable of eradicating the tendency for bad activities. So Shukadeva Goswami goes on and says, yes, one who is situated in perfect knowledge is better situated. But the inevitable is that even with perfect knowledge, some bad activities may be performed. And so, to supersede even that situation of perfect knowledge is the situation of being completely fixed at the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, in a mood of loving service. That eradicates even the tendency to engage in sinful activities. So strong. And to illustrate to illustrate how strong that devotional service is, even a hint, abhas rupa bhakti, even a hint of some attachment, a glimmer of some attachment to the Supreme Lord, how strong that is, he narrates the story of Ajamila. And so the first three chapters are made up of that narration. The Ajamila story is told. Ajamila experiences the dialogue between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, who then are deciding his fate. While they're deciding, it's him they're deciding about. And he's watching this conversation with great interest. And in the course of hearing the conversation, he becomes enlightened. So the conclusion of the discussion, Vishnudutas prevail without going into the details of on what basis they prevail. The Yamadutas recede and at the age of 88, Ajamila gets a second chance. He doesn't have to leave his... He still hasn't left his body. His time of death has come, but the soul has not been removed from the body because the Yamadutas were stopped. Because he called his son Narayan. So Vishnudutta's leave, Ajamila considers himself very fortunate, not just because he didn't have to die, but very fortunate because now he understands all of his mistakes and he perfects his life in devotion and then goes back to Godhead. But meanwhile, the Yamadutas, they're frustrated. They've never been stopped like this before. So they go huffing and puffing back to Yamaraj. What's going on? What happened? We thought you were supreme. Who is this? What's going on? Well, they knew that Lord Narayan, because they said in their teaching that Lord Narayan is supreme. And they were asked, what is Dharma? We've covered that this morning. Anyway, so there's a third chapter as Yamaraj explains to the Yamadutas the situation of authority. On what basis one derives authority. He's one authority, but he derives his authority on the supreme authority. That's where authority comes from. From the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, so, and we discussed this morning also. The Vedas are direct manifestations. Yamadutas know this. The Vedas are directly Swayambhu. They appear directly from the breathing, sound emanations of the Supreme Lord manifest that way. So they're not different than the Lord. And any authority, real authority, not just man-made, but and makeshift and flimsy, but real substantial authority comes from the Supreme Lord and the direct manifestation of the Vedas. So, after that lesson, I'm giving you a little overview of the first several chapters. I believe there's 19 chapters in this canto. Just like in the first canto, there's 19 chapters. 19 chapters here. So that we just did the first three. And then in the fourth chapter, this we discussed, fourth and fifth, we discussed in Singapore. The fourth chapter opens with Daksha taking a second birth. So in the fourth canto, we're in the reign of Swayambhuva Manu, the first of the 14 Manus. We mentioned this morning there's 10 topics in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. One of them is the Manvantaras. So that topic is covered. Starting with Swayambhuva Manu, and in the fourth canto it's still Swayambhuva Manu, and Daksha is one of the Prajapatis, and it's not that because someone is a Prajapati one has to be like Daksha, but one who does have some opulence like Daksha had and doesn't have commensurate spiritual qualification, that's a sure guarantee for a problem. Opulence without spiritual qualification. Because he becomes proud. Now, so we took some time to discuss about pride and the nature of pride. And it's pervasive. Wherever there's lack of spiritual qualification, because everybody has something. Prabhupada used the phrase, even a pauper is proud of his penny. We all have something. Our opulence compared to that of the devas is nothing. The pauper with a penny compared to those that have many is nothing. Everyone in relation to Bhagavan is nothing. But we're proud of whatever it is we have. It's just the nature of being in the material world. Raga dvesha samuthena dvandva mohena bharata. We have this problem. We have this dvesha towards he who actually is the source of all opulence. So because we have this dvesha and we have raga, we covet that which he has, any little slice of it, we get all. So we're protected by spiritual qualification. And Prabhupada explains this whole canto's focuses on protection. And in short, protection is spiritual qualification. Spiritual qualification is protection. And lack of spiritual qualification is a problem. No protection. So again, it goes back to the question that leads off the canto. What can prevent one or protect one from inadvertent mistakes and having to suffer from those inadvertent mistakes? Spiritual qualification. And that spiritual qualification is defined. Someone can remember the verse we recited this morning? Kechit Devalaya Paktya. Someone must remember. Loud enough so they can hear in the back.
Kechit Devalaya Paktya Vasudeva Parayana Aham Dunvanti Katsena Nidharam
Nidharam Nidharam Iva Bhaskara. We recited it several times this morning. The different devotees know the verse. They're just being shy right now. And this is the verse. It's a very important verse in the whole canto. It's an important message of the whole Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Parayana. Narayana Parayana. It appears several times. Explaining this in Singapore. It's like a symphony. A great musical piece. There's a certain little melody that is played. And then goes off and different, and it comes back the melody. The refrain, the strain of the theme of the symphony. So, in literary composition, it's also symphonic. It's very wonderful. And the whole, I've noticed, I mean, I've not been instructed like this, but it's just my perception, something I've noticed, that messages that appear and repeat themselves like this, they're thematic. And it resonates with what you heard over here, what you heard over there. It just churns all those same emotions and realizations once again, just to hear. I can give examples, but there's not time. So, Vasudeva Parayana. This Parayana is a strong word. It means your whole life. Your life's dedication is, there's nothing but Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya. Kevala Bhakti. Absolute devotion with nothing else. So, the narration of Daksha making his appearance, so it goes back to the fourth canto where Daksha was proud of his position. So he deliberately staged his demise. He staged a yajna that he invited everybody except the person he felt some thing with, Lord Shiva, his son-in-law. He didn't invite him. He naturally knew his daughter would want to attend a big function, but Lord Shiva wouldn't be there. So, you know the story. Offense was made. Sati became so disgusted with this offense of her father, she decided to give up her body because that would eliminate any connection that she had just through the body with this person that offended Lord Shiva so badly. She just gave up her body. And Daksha stood by and watched her do it. Can you imagine? A father, the daughter's angry, so she's going to go harm herself in some way. And the father just lets her do it. I mean, it was offense upon offense. Madness upon madness. And what's the source of that madness? Pride. Proud of what? Proud of his opulence. So, he lost his opulence. His head was cut off. And upon plea, the goat's head was put in its place. That was so humiliating, he gave up his life. And that was in Swayambhuva Manu's reign. So in this canto, we fast forward to Chakshusha Manu. That's Manu number 6. A lot of time passed. Daksha was somewhere, it doesn't say where. But he was probably purifying himself. Because he makes his appearance by taking birth in the Chakshusha Manu reign. And sure enough, he is a new improved Daksha. But he still has some Daksha tendencies. One of those Daksha tendencies is he's a Prajapati again. So he tries to produce Praja. This is the beginning of chapter 4. He tries to produce the praja, and many are produced. He doesn't feel he's doing his service as a prajapati sufficiently, so he gives up his position of being prajapati and goes into a secluded place and performs very extended austerities and offers certain prayers, and they're presented, and they're very wonderful prayers. The Hamsaguhya prayers, glorifying the Supreme Lord. Much like the Yamadutas, they understood who was the Supreme Lord. Daksha, he also knew who was the Supreme Lord. He just had pride. Pride can be in the heart of somebody who knows who is supreme. So, he does his austerities and prayers so expertly that the Supreme Lord appears before him. And the Supreme Lord knows exactly what is in the mind of Daksha. He did his austerities because he wanted something. Akama, sarvakamova, mokshakama, udaradi, tivrena, bhakti yogena, yajeta purusham param. Second canto Bhagavatam. Well, he wasn't in the Akama category. He wasn't in the moksha kama category. He was in the sarva kama category. So Lord Vishnu gave him a particular wife with whom he could produce many, 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 many praja. So he could be a good prajapati. And so he did. He produced 10,000 sons. Imagine. And told them, you assist me. So they went to perform austerities to assist to produce good praja. Narada Muni came along. But these boys, they're doing such nice sacrifice. Perhaps they're intelligent enough, perhaps they have the qualification, that they don't need to involve themselves in fruitive activity. Again, going back to the fruitive activity proposal of Shukadeva Goswami that was discarded. So Narada gives a extended metaphor in one short presentation, the metaphor of the futility of fruitive activity. And it's all metaphor, and the sons of Daksha, they're called the Hariyashvas, they understand completely. It's like takes a minute to recite what Narada said. Within a minute, they understood the whole thing. The sacrifice with its objective to get some material strength so they could do material activities very nicely. They redirected their whole purpose to that of satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They remain in a renounced position. And Narada took off. Prajapati Daksha found out what happened. He was fried, as they say these days. So, again, he produced 1,000 sons, Savalashvas. Same thing happened. Narada came, redirected them. So then, later on, Narada and Daksha had little discussion. And Daksha let him have it. Daksha is the subordinate. Narada is by far the superior. But he's insulting him in so many ways. Daksha and new improved Daksha with the same problem. Pride. The nature of pride is that one cannot see what's what, especially one cannot see the Supreme Lord, and one cannot see in the proper way the representatives of the Supreme Lord. Narada is not new to this, because he's such a saintly person, and he's very, very compassionate. So from time to time he meets people who are blinded by pride. A very well-known example is his encounter with the sons of Kuvera, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, who were so out of it. They were standing naked before Narada in the sacred river coming down the side of Mount Kailash, where they were enjoying in an intoxicated state in a heavenly region. And Narada comes to visit, and they just stand in front of him, unashamed, shameless. Totally. Not only intoxicated by the beverage that they had been drinking, but intoxicated by their pride. Who are you? As they say, who are you, man? I mean, shameless. And as we discussed this morning, especially those who have qualification, those that know better and misbehave like that, they're more punishable, more culpable. One who's situated in knowledge and acts contrary to what one knows and understands, it's more serious, more culpable. So, In the case of Nalakuvara and Manigriva, Narada considers, I'll just go through this one a little bit. He considers what's behind the problem of these two. What's behind pride? What is it? What's the root cause of the problem? because of lack of spiritual qualification, when one has some opulence, then one becomes filled with this pride in the opulence. It eclipses one's good judgment, one's good qualification, one's respect. And as it continues, it goes further. One not only loses good judgment, but one starts to become harsh and cruel towards others, including towards one's superiors. But it doesn't just not just superiors, it's anybody. And I'm Nava Kuvera and Mani Griva. I'm the son of Kuvera. And anything I do is okay because I'm the son of Kuvera. And over here to my side is Lord Shiva, because he's so close, the relationship between Kuvera and Shiva is so close. I'm close to Lord Shiva too. I've got him on my side. So anything I do is okay. You're in the way, step on your face. Anything. Harsh action, cruel action. Out of pride. But one can be rescued from pride if one can be a little submissive to the representative of the Supreme Lord. Because this topic that we're discussing is who's punishable. That's what the Vishnu Dutas asked the Yamadutas. Who's punishable and who's not punishable? One who violates Dharma is punishable, according to the Yamadutas. This is punishable. But the devotee of the Lord is so merciful, they can free one from that which one is punishable for. If one is just a little respectful towards that representative, one can be relieved of that problem. Just like another, a very contrasting example, again with Narada Muni, is with Magrari the hunter. What Magrari was doing was very punishable. Half killing animals. And when Narada saw this, he approached the hunter. And the hunter was submissive. Oh, great sage, what are you doing in the forest? It's very unsafe here. See all these animals. And by your coming, you've just scared all them away. And so my livelihood has been depleted, but that's okay. You're a saintly person. Is there something I can do for you? Some gift. I'll gladly give you any skin that you like. Deer skin, tiger skin, you name it. I have so many skins. I'll give you my favorite one.
Oh, I have no skins, thank you.
But I'll take one thing as charity. Yes, yes, what is that? Don't half kill the animals. Don't half kill the animals. Why not? Because they're suffering. They're suffering? I never thought of that. That means if they're suffering from half killing, they're suffering if I kill them too. So maybe I shouldn't do it. Yeah, you shouldn't do it. He was rescued because although what he was doing was very punishable. You could say on a relative scale, more punishable than what Nava Kuvera and Mani Griva were doing. They're both punishable. But there was his whole thing was half killing animals and getting delight. Oh, look at them flap. Oh, getting delight. But because he was submissive, respectful, he was made into a pure devotee. But Nava Kuvera and Mani Griva, they were completely gone. No hope of rescuing them. So very compassionately, Narada contemplates, what is the best thing? He wasn't angry because they were disrespectful. They've insulted me. I'm going to do something to get back at them. And that's not Narada. He was thinking, what can be done? They're in such a pitiable condition. They're so elevated. They have so much facility. They're from such a pious situation. But they're so much abusing the situation. What can be done? Let me benefit them by relieving them from that which is the cause of their pride. That is their opulence, their birth, and their wealth. Take it away. Gone. And for a long time, they should be deprived of this. Then, the benediction, along with relieving them of the pride, the further benediction is that they would be take birth as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and then they'd have an encounter with Krishna. And because their hearts would now be softened and submissive, they would be delivered to become pure devotees. There it is. That's the best thing for them. How they can become pure devotees. And Krishna is he's so much indebted to his devotees like Narada. The very wonderful description by our acharyas. When Krishna was a little boy, he saw these two trees in the courtyard. He knew exactly what was the situation. Somehow I have to make good the word of Narada. I have to have a plan so these two can be delivered. And he made his transcendental plan. And he delivered them. And they were completely freed from pride by the good association of Narada. They had a bit of a price to pay, but they became freed from their pride. And this is a great kindness of a sadhu to relieve someone of their pride, because you can't go anywhere in real well-being with pride. So, Daksha was proud, and he cursed Narada. He insulted him in many ways. He spoke very wrongly in many ways. He misunderstood him in many ways, and he cursed him. And Narada is such a saint. He didn't respond at all. He didn't. Don't you know who I am, Narada Muni? I accept. In fact, he saw the curse of Daksha, which is that he would have no fixed residence. He would not be able to stay any place for a length of time. As a benediction. Very good. I'll just keep going everywhere and doing the same thing. And noteworthy also is, again, although he had just been cursed, he had been spoken to very harshly and cursed by Daksha, he stayed for some time with the contemplation. A man in distress, this is a good opportunity for preaching Krishna consciousness. I'm going to stay for a while and probably can get Daksha to become freed from some pride. So he stayed just for that, to benedict, just for that purpose, just to benefit Daksha. After some time, when his anger subsides, he realized, uh-oh, I was really over the top. I really got carried away. And he'll feel some remorse. And then I can explain to him some higher truths. Not now. He's bent out of shape right now. Daksha goes back to his Prajapati program. And instead of 10,000 or 1,000 sons, he produces 60 daughters. Narada isn't going to come along and convince them to become renunciates. 60 daughters. So those 60 daughters are in turn entrusted to different very, very qualified husbands for the same purpose as he had in mind for the Hariyashvas and Shavalashvas, and that is that they should help populate the planet. This is at the beginning of the reign of Chakshusha Manu. So that's one of the things that Manu has to do, is provide good population to cover the creation. So, just going to mention a few things. So, in this chapter, chapter 6, there's some interesting details of how not only varieties of beings, varieties of species takes place, and I'll share with you a little insight on how that takes place. This is from Sadaputta Samhita. from one devotee who has studied these things for his service to Srila Prabhupada very carefully. He's explained by, he's a mathematician, PhD from Cornell University, and probability theory in mathematics says, in short, that you can't get complexity from simplicity, but rather the other way around. So it's just like from genetic, eighth grade science, if you have blue eyes, you may have a gene for brown eyes and blue eyes, but then you have two genes for blue and they come out blue because there's a dominant recessive gene, right? Remember all that stuff, eighth grade science. So you have to have a gene pool in order to get brown eyes and blue eyes. You're not going to get green eyes because it's not in the gene pool. And brown eyes is going to dominate over blue eyes. So if there's just one of the two genes, then it's just going to be brown eyes. There'd have to be two blues because that's a recessive trait. In a similar way, the Prajapatis have a big gene pool. And so though they may be manifesting a certain set, they have a gene pool that allows for other sets. That's his explanation. I mean, it's not exactly genetically, but so to speak, as in that principle, they have a capacity. It's their service. So to do their service, they're given some capacity. Just like how many persons in here can play mridanga, like a couple of our mridanga players, and how many can play harmonium, and how many can sing. Some persons have this ability, and some persons have that ability. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard Digvijay Pandit, like the blowing of the wind, recite spontaneously 100 Sanskrit verses glorifying the Ganges, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him about verse 55 to express to him the qualities and faults of that verse. And Prajapati Daksha, the Digvijay Pandit said, "How were you able to remember verse 55? I was speaking so fast. Spontaneous Sanskrit poetry. How can you remember verse 55? Lord Chaitanya said, "Some people are endowed with the Supreme Lord with the ability to compose Sanskrit poetry spontaneously. And some people are endowed by the Supreme Lord to have an excellent memory. They're all gifts given to us by the Supreme Lord." Or what Prahlad Maharaj said to Hiranyakashipu, "Who am I getting my power from, my dear demoniac father? The same person as you, the Supreme Lord." So from the Supreme Lord, we all are given something that we can do. And we can be proud of that something, thinking it's mine. I did it. I'm doing it. Look at me. And have our vision of the Supreme Lord lost, and his representatives lost, and the process of approaching him lost, and be very, very famous enjoyers of the material world. Or we can be very conscious of the fact that whatever it is that we have is derived from the Supreme Lord. And out of respect and gratitude, we can use those things in service to the Supreme Lord. So the Prajapatis have a big capacity. Specifically, they have the capacity to produce various praja. It's their duty. It's their service to the Lord. So they produce different offspring, and that's discussed. Different species. And then I'm going to read just a couple of translations here, starting with text 36, 33 through 36. Vaishvanara, this is chapter 6, canto 6. Vaishvanara, the son of Danu, had four beautiful daughters. Their names are given. Hiranyaksha married one of those daughters. Kratu married Hayashira. Thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Kashyapa married two of them, the other two daughters of Vaishvanara. From the womb of these two wives of Kashyapa came 60,000 sons, headed by Nivata Kavacha, who are known as the Palomas and the Kalakeyas. They were physically very strong and expert in fighting, and their aim was to disturb the sacrifices performed by great sages. Not very nice. My dear king, so this is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. My dear king, when your grandfather, Arjuna, went to the heavenly planets, he alone killed all these demons, and thus King Indra became extremely affectionate towards him. Those of you that are a little bit familiar with Mahabharata may be aware of this. So it's parallel narration in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a dynasty that goes way back. And because the reign of Vaivasvatamanu, who is the next Manu, that comes in the beginning in the ninth canto. So this is still Chakshusha Manu. So for a long time, this dynasty continued. And Arjun took care of the problem. Indra became very, very pleased with him. So one of these 10,000 sons of Kashyapa was Viprachiti. Viprachiti begot 101 sons with his wife, of whom the eldest is Rahu, and the others are 100 Ketus. All of them attained positions in the influential planets. So the planets were named after them, Rahu and Ketu. Those of you know a little astrology, Rahu and Ketu. Now please hear me as I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order. Kashyapa and Aditi. In this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, descended by his plenary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditi are as follows. Vivaswan, Aryama, Pusha, Tvashta, Savita, Bhaga, Dhata, Vidhata, Varuna, Mitra, Shatru, and Urukrama. So one of the wives of these sons, the son named Vivaswan. So Vivaswan is the son of Aditi, And so, any of you been to Vrindavan? Vrindavan? You know Vrindavan. You haven't been to Vrindavan? Oh, okay. May you all one day go to Vrindavan. There's one very, very wonderful Vaishnav there who is, if you're very fortunate, you'll get the opportunity to go on Parikram in Vrindavan with Dina Bandhu Prabhu, a god brother, very, very wonderful, pure-hearted Vrajavasi from America. Anyway, he very much likes telling this story that's just in this verse, where one of the wives of Vivaswan, her name was Sangya. So she was awarded, there's some detail which I can't recall, somehow she was given as a husband, or arrangement was made for her to have as a husband, the sun god, Vivaswan. So when she came before the sun god Vivaswan, she closed her eyes because he's so effulgent. And Vivaswan was very unhappy with that. And so he told her, what, because something, this displeasure that you have caused me, you will have as a son the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. And she, her quality was very, very good. She just was overwhelmed with his brilliance. And she pleaded with him and pleased him and said, very well, you have another child who will relieve one of all the reactions so they'll never have to come before Yamaraj. And that is Yamuna. So Yamuna took birth from the combination of Vivaswan and Sangya. Then Vivaswan had a sister whose name was Yami, and Yami traveled through the countryside in a form of a horse, a mare, a female horse, and Yami gave birth to the Ashvini Kumaras. There's no description. But the Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses, and Prabhupada has explained that in the heavenly planets there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of verses. The Bhagavatam is much bigger. So details are expanded in different places. So another one of the sons of Aditi was Tvashta. And Tvashta married, but the marriage arrangement was, he was married to one of the daughters of the Daityas. So Tvashta, Kashyapa and Aditi, their sons were Brahmins. So Tvashta was a Brahmin, and he married a Brahmani from the Daitya families. And as a son was born Vishvarup. Two sons. So Vishvarup becomes important in just a moment, you'll see. And so we have in chapter 7 another story of pride. Who is very famous for being proud amongst the devas? Indra does it again in chapter 7. He's seated on his royal throne with his queen, and the Gandharvas, they're singing, and the Apsaras, they're dancing, and he's enjoying, and Brihaspati comes into the royal assembly, and Indra's too absorbed. He pays no attention to his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Brihaspati doesn't say anything. He just leaves. Now, I'll explain something to you from the Sanskrit of the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. You know what those are, correct? So, there's 10 in number. They're from Padma Purana. And the first of those offenses is to blaspheme the devotees who dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. The Sanskrit is sadhu ninda. Ninda means speaking foul things. Blaspheming, Prabhupada is. Blaspheming a sadhu. And another one of the offenses is neglecting the orders of the spiritual master. Guru avagya. So avagya and ninda are very different. They're both bad. One is blasphemy, and the other is literally just means neglect. It's like someone comes into this room right now and starts, "You people, blah, blah, rah, 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 rah." That's ninda. And another situation is somebody just ignores. Let's say somebody comes in and I speak to them. Rah, rah, rah. That's what Indra did. His offense wasn't a direct act of harsh behavior and language. He just neglected him. Why did he neglect him? He was too absorbed in his enjoying business. What's the merit? What's the kriti for him to be in that position of enjoyment? It's the mercy of his spiritual master. But he wasn't seeing that. He was seeing, enjoying, having a nice time, nice party. Whoopee. So, Brihaspati left. And Indra was, it was too late. That's another one of the things about offenses. Once you do, you've done it. You can't, like, let's just move the clock back and I'll do it differently next time or this time. It's done. So they searched everywhere for Brihaspati, every imaginable place, they couldn't find him. Indra was really worried, and he had reason to be worried, because word went to the Daityas that Indra's offended Sukracharya. You know what that means? He's going to lose all his strength. Get our armies together. Let's go and challenge the Devas and we'll take over. And they did. They took over. So the Devas came with all their arrows and wounds and they came to Lord Brahma, searching, hoping that he would give them an answer to their problem. So first he explained the nature of the problem. The nature of the problem is pride. This whole canto is describing protection. How can we be protected from pride? Because it prevents us from having spiritual qualification. And if you have spiritual qualification, you're protected. But if you have pride, you can't be protected. So that's what Brahma says. I was going to read the verses, but I won't. You've made a big mistake. You become intoxicated by your position, and you've neglected the person that provided you with that position. And now because of that offense, your position has depleted, and it's taken away from you. And now you can't even find Brihaspati and make proper amends. So there's your mistake. And now, here's my suggested remedy. You go to the son of Tvashta, who is Vishwarup, and he's very, very qualified. And you take shelter of him, and you don't make the same mistake. Don't make the same mistake. Don't disrespect him at any point in time for any reason. Don't disrespect him. And he'll help you. You will be protected. Yes, yes, Brahma, thank you very much. Vishwaru, please help us, please help us. So he helped them. And he gave them the Narayana Kavacha mantra. And Indra protected himself with the Narayana Kavacha mantra. He just followed exactly what Vishwaru said. And the mantras and various sides protected his various limbs. And again, by the descending mercy of Vishwarup, they regained their kingdom. They became invincible and regained their kingdom. And some time passed. But the tendency remained. Same thing as going right back to the beginning part of the canto. One can counteract a mistake, a bad behavior, by another fruitive activity. But can fruitive activity counteract fruitive activity in such a way that the tendency for that fruitive activity is taken away? No. And sure enough, tendency came out again. The tendency came out again with some detail, because the time, I'm not going to go into the detail next time. But Vishwarup, Vishwarup performed a yajna. And he gave the somarasa, the benefits of the yajna, to Indra and the devas. But he kept some on the side, because he had some partiality to the daityas. He was the son of his mother, and the mother was from the daitya dynasty. So he gave some to them. Indra came to know about it. So he confronted Vishwarup and cut off his head. Indra, King of Heaven, cut off his spiritual master's head. Well, Indra's in trouble. Pride. It's a theme in this canto. It's there because the theme is protection, and what we need protection from is ourselves. We need protection from these bad qualities, and the medium for that protection, it's already been described in the philosophical section that we covered this morning. Now it's being exemplified in a story. But the protection, the means of coming to the Vasudeva Parayana stage is by association with the Vasudeva Parayana. The way that you can get bhakti is by coming in contact with someone who's carrying bhakti in their heart, and they give you some. They just spill some over on you, and you're drenched. Take a bhakti bath. And if you offend those persons, you're finished. And this isn't in the case of Vishwarup. He's not Mahabhagavata Vaishnava. But he's the one who's given protection to the devas. So what happens next is the father of Vishwarup. He's prepared to teach Indra a lesson. So he prepares a yajna that will create a demon that will kill Indra. He's not a kshatriya, he's a Brahmin. So he does it through mantras. And I'll end with this. It's getting exciting now. But I have to end it, the clock is still going. There's many narrations that are found in various Puranas that are found in other Puranas. There's one narration that's specific for the Bhagavad Purana, and this narration of the son or the personality who's created by Tvashta. And we'll hear more about that personality later. So, Vritrasura was the demon or the personality that was created by the Yajna of Tvashta. So the story of Vishvarup. No, the story of Vritrasura is unique to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's a very important story in this canto. So when I return, we'll describe the story of Vritrasura. And it connects with another narration found elsewhere. When King Chitraketu was cursed, and because he was Narayana Parayana, and he wasn't like Indra. Indra is a devotee, but Indra's not a pure devotee. Indra has really strong other desires and doesn't take shelter properly of the Supreme Lord. Daksha, same program. It's not having other desires, it's how you address yourself to the Supreme Lord. That's the central consideration for advancing in spiritual life. How you address yourself to the Supreme Lord, and that's monitored by, or it's assisted by, how you address yourself to the representatives of the Supreme Lord. If one can have very strong material desire, but if one takes shelter of the Supreme Lord and takes guidance from the representative of the Supreme Lord, how to act in such a way that the Supreme Lord is pleased, you're protected from that desire, and what to speak of the ill consequences of misplacing that desire, particularly in the whole area of pride. And I'll just be specific and say, in a place like this, where many of you have some credential that others don't have in all of India, there's a big opening for pride. You have capacity that some don't have, as far as I understand. For every person that's accepted here at IIT, there's how many applicants? Thousands? Whatever it is. You're very special people. And you can be proud of that and be victimized by that pride. Or you can be protected from that pride and still have the same opulence, but see the source of that opulence and turn your attention to the source of that opulence in the mood of devotion and be protected. And your lives will become glorious instead of inglorious. It's a question of consciousness. It's free will. And there are means by which the ultimate purpose of life can become gloriously established, and the fullness of that opulence that has come from the Supreme Lord can be used to its maximum. You don't have to put it in a closet and pretend it's not there. Use it to its maximum. But beware of pride. So this canto is very, very relevant canto. I'll end with that. See if there's any discussion. Yeah.
Well, it seems a little hypocritical that only when Brihaspati comes in, there has to be this respect. Even when he's not there, shouldn't Indra be watchful?
Sure.
pride is already there, in other words. It's not just that you're neglecting the spiritual master.
Right. That's right. It's not. The word that you use is hypocritical. It's symptomatic of his problems. But let's say we know that in the heart of everyone there's some pride. So I can know that in my heart there's some lust, there's some anger, there's some greed, there's some pride. It's there. Now, am I being vigilant about that? Am I ensuring that that's at least held in place and ideally purified out of my consciousness by the strength of devotion? So Brihaspati has a tough group of students to work with. They're devas. Powerful, opulent, pious, strong. Even more, the tendency for pride. So it's Brihaspati, it's part of Brihaspati's, and they've taken their birth as devas and the associates of in the whole realm, the kingdom of the devas, because they have that strong tendency. So it's not like Brihaspati has a bhakti program for all those who take birth in the heavenly planets to become Shuddha Bhaktas. They're not going to join his bhakti program. They've got another disposition. So he's managing that disposition. Of course, a Shuddha Bhakta Vaishnav would even make such an attempt, like Prahlad Maharaj would make such an attempt. But yeah, it's the very nature of svarga. That while there's opulence, there's also pride. And any of you that have associated with proud people, to be in a mix of people that are all proud people, it's yucky. It's not the same being in the company of persons who are very, very qualified, but very, very humble, not proud. Yeah, so yeah, what you're saying is, I would say it a little differently. I would say that amanitvam adambitvam, lacking those qualifications, his knowledge was also lacking. Because those are the first two that are identified in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna as items of knowledge. Humility and pridelessness. 13th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, text number 6. Amanitvam adambitvam. So he wasn't humble in general. I mean, he had the capacity to sometimes exhibit humility. But it was superficial. And that's the group that Sukracharya that Brihaspati is the spiritual master of. It's a problem. As it is a problem here to work with persons who, by very nature, since childhood, you've been pumped up. Yeah, you're the greatest. You're so intelligent. Go for it. All the way. You're great. And so many people patting you on the back telling you the same thing. Yeah, you're great. Yeah, I'm great. It's a problem. And I hope you all recognize the nature of the problem. And so the message of becoming free from pride is the right message. But it's a big pill. Because there's big pride. So that will be exhibited in your point is, not only in the presence of the spiritual master and the acharya and the teacher. It'll be exhibited in day to day. So therefore, instruction needs to go not only in the presence of, but in the absence of, to be respectful, to be respectful to all living entities. Tranadapi sunichena. Tororapi sahishnana. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sada. Sada. Always. But it's while saying that, it's also it's explicitly an offense in the presence of the spiritual master, or the instructions of the spiritual master are just ignored. It doesn't have to be like wrinkle it up and throw it in the rubbish bin. Just don't pay attention to it, like it's not there, as if it's not there. Conduct your life as if instructions aren't there. That's an offense. It's called the mad elephant offense. It's the most destructive of all the offenses, and it can destroy everything. The example is given of planting a nice garden. I've watched the gardener do his thing back here, and I wonder how pleased the gardener would become if we invited an elephant in the backyard. Spend a couple of weeks camping out. What would be left of the garden? Finished. He'd be in an uproar. Garden would be finished. Whatever efforts are made to try to bring about nice quality in one's life, this elephant offense will destroy the whole thing. Just like that. Bow. So, serious. Yes.
Does the offense qualify as a mad elephant offense only if the spiritual master takes offense, or even if he doesn't take offense?
Even if he doesn't. Specifically, the offense against the holy name is, out of humility, the spiritual master may not take offense, but Nama Prabhu takes offense. Just like Maharaj Ambarish, the actions of Durvasa Muni, he didn't take offense. He got a reaction for that offense. Yes?
Sir, when Indra is so full of pride, why is he being again and again given the kingdom of
heaven? Well, he has a lot of qualification too. He's been given a chance. Lots of us get chances. Lots of us get repeated chances. It's not like, you know, there's nobody else. Sometimes Indra's replaced. But he has a... We can look at the disqualification side, but he has, at the same time, great qualification. And the Lord is very kind to his devotee and rectifies. Just like when the Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill, he curbed the pride of Indra. And the consequence of that was Indra was very repentant. Yeah.
Once the austerities are performed, the Lord gives powers to the person.
Yeah.
And knowing very well that these powers at some stage will be missing.
That's right.
I was visualizing the word, I mean, kindly gave a glimpse of the word, yeah. Had the Lord not given such powers, and this Bhagavan Leela would not have been there, okay. What kind of word would have been there?
Well, we'd have a pretty empty world, because it's just, look at it this way, you're looking at powers, but even just getting a body, getting a penny, If you're going to, if we're going to misuse a penny, better he doesn't give us a penny, because we may misuse it. It comes back to his question about Indra's position. We have a body, and we're going to do things that are violent. They're going to cause suffering for other living entities. So we shouldn't get a body. You'd have an empty world, because this is the kingdom of Maya, where people are doing all kinds of mistaken things all the time, based upon a fundamental mistake, misuse of free will. That misuse of free will is aversion, dvesha, stronger than aversion, animosity towards the Supreme. So we're not put out of existence. We're given some existence in a place of punishment. We're sent to Siberia, this material world, place of suffering. And there's a body. And while we're suffering, we're doing things that are harming other people, with powers to do it, and some opulence, some wealth to facilitate those powers. And that's the world that we live in. It's a nasty place. But at the same time, it's an opportunity. So the Lord keeps giving us opportunities. He gives us bodies, He gives us opulences, He gives us some strength, some intelligence, and the option to use it properly. Or, if we insist, use it improperly. A lot of people using improperly. There's a consequence for that. You shrink. Punarmushika bhava. You know that one. Yeah. Something? Anyone? Yeah. Well, the last part is, why did not Brihaspati instruct him that way? What's your question? I got the lead up. What's the punchline?
Brihaspati would have instructed him that by atonement, tendency will not go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, why Indra didn't apply it? Or why he failed to apply it?
Why Indra didn't apply it?
Yes.
Well, he has a certain disposition, a very strong disposition. Just like you have people that you know, that you, some of them you may say, my dear friend, let me take you into confidence and express that really what you need to do is just devote your life to serving the Supreme Lord. And all these things that are concerning you and anxieties and distresses, they'll just go away. Some persons you won't say that to. Because you know it's just going to bounce off them like a rubber ball hitting the wall. You'll say something else. At least you should try this. At least don't get angry all the time.
By this problem, what? Problem of
Indra
remains as it is. It is not solved. It is still there.
You've got it. Indra's not getting it. Now let's see, just like your question this morning, let's see how well you... The real test is for you to apply the therapy. The therapeutic message is in your hand. You understand it. Let's not see how Indra will apply. Let's see how you apply. Naviyovana?
When we come in contact with the Narayana Parayana, this is the solution to all these problems. We are coming from this background where we have...
Oh, it's the opportunity for that solution, yeah.
We have all these stockpile of problems which we have. And in the course of interacting with the Narayana Parayanas, how do we... What is the protection for us? How do we associate with
the... Well, the general principle is, you know, the next question is going to be, can we go into some of the details? But this, because of time, just start, stay with the principle. The principle is that we recognize our position, which is we're stuck in the samsrita, we're stuck in the path of compounding our involvement in material existence for want of that spiritual shelter. And here's, and the next is to see properly, quite apart from how I'm leading my life, here's another person who's leading their life free from that problem. Therefore, the third step is, let me take shelter. And what does that mean, let me take shelter? Well, I should hear from them, inquire submissively. I should render service, tadidhi pranipatena, pariprashnena, sevaya. That's what I should do. But not just mechanically, superficially, or cosmetically. It should be pranipat, with submission. But I'm not going to submit if I'm thinking, I'm the brightest one around. I've got all these... If I'm filled with that kind of mentality, I won't be submissive. I may participate. I'm not going to be submissive. Forget it. Be submissive. That's for wimps. And I'm not a wimp. I'm me. So, it's not for wimps. It's for persons who have an honest assessment of my material circumstance, my situation in the big picture. The big picture is I'm stuck in repeated birth and death. And this pride which I have in my heart, it's keeping me here. And it's bringing me to the position of getting smashed regularly. So let me take shelter and inquire submissively and render service. And let me do that from the heart. And not for 5 minutes, but consistently. At least let me... sincerely and earnestly cultivating that. Maintain the proper respect and relationship. Knowing that I have a tendency to do other, I have to be very vigilant to not once again slip into the mode that I've been very conditioned to do, and that is be proud and be blinded and not be able to see Narada Muni or any proper representative of the Lord and offend them and neglect them and disrespect them, ignore them, carry on with my pride program. I don't want to slip into that. I'm vigilant. And when I'm given reminders to watch out for that, thank you. Not, I don't bristle. Why are you saying this? Pride. It's someone that hasn't asked a question, okay? Yeah.
Is the person who is worshipping Supreme Lord with material desires also, is he also relieved of sinful tendencies in time?
In time. There's the key. So, did you get his question in the back row? No. He's the verse that we were reciting this morning and mentioned again. The verse that Shukadeva Goswami presents, that Maharaj Parikshit wholeheartedly embraces as the means of protecting one from experiencing the reactions of inadvertent mistakes, or even intentional mistakes. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dhunvanti karchnyena nidharam eva bhaskaram. So his question is, is the person who has so many material desires, sarva kama, are they also relieved if they engage in tivrena, bhakti yogena, or if you come to the stage of vasudeva parayana, you can come from, like the hub, you can come from any one of the spokes. You reach the hub, you're okay. So the question, when will one be relieved of even the tendency? The answer is yes. Kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana? Yes. But if it's intermittent, then no. So it has to be very carefully sustained. Anything that's carefully sustained requires attention. Anything. You're playing your keyboards and your mind drifts. Hit the wrong keys. You have to sustain attention. The cook is in the kitchen and their mind drifts and something burns. Or they put the wrong thing in or touch the hot pot and burn. It happens. Sustained attention. Sustained effort. And the descending mercy of the Lord, and tendency will come. But cultivation. From our position, it's cultivation. We're the sarva-kama position. We're not the akama position. We're not the moksha-kama position. We're in the having material desires, with material desires. Sakama. Tivrena bhakti-yogena. Tiva is intense. That's what it is. Very concentrated attention. So there's another verse in this chapter, in chapter 1. Tapasa brahmacharjena samena cha damena cha tyagena satya shochabhyam yamena niyamenava. That's a very important verse for students. I think there's some students here. Tapasa. So in the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada gives a definition from the Vedas. What is the meaning of tapasa? Tapasa, we normally think of austerity or something that hurts. It's painful. That's austerity. The definition that's given in the Vedas is different. Not just that it hurts. Tapasa means two things. Withdrawing the mind and senses from anything else, and focusing the mind on something that is purifying and elevating. Mind and senses. So like Ekadasi, you may fast on Ekadasi. It's withdrawing the senses and mind and fixing the mind and senses on the Supreme. That's the vrata of Ekadasi. So I may have, because I have sakama, it hurts if I don't do my mind and sense business, just however it flows. If I restrict the flow and focus it on something that's purifying and elevating. That's the normal sense that we have of tapasya. But that's just external. The internal part is the driving force behind tapasya for one who is on the path of purification. It's ecstatic. And therefore the refraining part, it's not a problem. The hunger with fasting, or the discipline of chanting, japa. That's another tapa. you don't do some other things and you do some things with your mind and senses and focus. It's tapa. And it takes care of sarvakama or moksha kama. Someone that's not asked a question yet would like to?
Okay. In the human body, when there is a human body, the pride is linked to both material gains and spiritual knowledge.
Well, it's not only spiritual knowledge, spiritual success. Not only spiritual knowledge. There's two kinds. It's correct. But it's a very valid and a very valuable distinction. Two kinds of pride. And subsets of those. Yeah.
Spiritual success, I think.
Yeah. Spiritual success. Yeah.
For example, following the instructions of Shiksha Guru gives me a pride as if I become closer to Krishna.
Yeah.
If that pride comes, then
it's another no-no. It's another, the red light should start flashing. The bell should ring. Ding, 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 ding. This is violation. It's an anartha. In Madhurya Kandambani, you know that one? The book, Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? Chapter 4, he analyzes unwanted things in the heart. Anartha. There's artha, and there's anartha. Something wanted, something unwanted. The things unwanted in the heart arise from different sources. So the anarthas are categorized or analyzed according to their origin. So there's four of them. And you just touched on two of them. One of them is anarthas that arise from past pious activities. And it's not the pious activity or the fruit of the pious activity that's the problem. It's the enjoying spirit. That's the problem. So I've done many pious activities. Like many of you, I'm sure, have done many pious activities. And from those pious activities, there's some fruits of those pious activities. One who tries to be the enjoyer of those fruits, of those pious activities, that's an anartha. There's so many austerities that you've undergone for years, to your studies. And those austerities have produced some fruits. And you try to be the enjoyer of those fruits. It's an anartha. It'll bring a certain material prosperity, success, result, and some suffering result, along with that material prosperity and trying to be the enjoyer of that material prosperity. Very fundamental teaching. It's expressed very, very clearly. I summarized only this morning and this afternoon. But it's explicitly in detail discussed here. And in Madhurya Kandambani, it's also elaborated upon. It's subtle, but it's really clear. The less subtle is the anarthas that arise in the heart due to past sinful activities. That's clear. Sinful activities, bad results, suffer. The anartha. Not just the problem, the circumstance, it's being blocked from our path towards the Supreme. We're just dealing with that. But someone else is dealing with the other. They're enjoying spirit and their fruits. Like sometimes I go to people's homes and they have children. And you go to the children's room and the place is plastered everywhere with toys and games. And I'm thinking, poor kid. And that's because the affection the parents are giving the child is toys and games. They're not getting the affection of their parents. They're getting the toys and the games where the parents are off earning so much money. The child wants affection. So the lesson is affection forget it. Toys and games. So when they grow up, that's how to enjoy life, toys and games. Prosper and have lots of toys and games. Don't take relationships seriously. I mean, it has so many ramifications. It's an anartha. It's an obstacle on the path of achieving shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Supposing one gets beyond that one and gets into very, very serious spiritual practices. So another source of anartha is offenses that are made in the course of spiritual practices. Supposing one gets on the other side of that, their spiritual success. Enjoying the fruits of that spiritual success. It's like, darn it, you know, I can't win. But yes, you can. It's the enjoying spirit that's the problem. Offensiveness on the one side, and enjoying spirit on the other side. The simple solution is become a humble servant. No, I don't want to become a humble servant. I want to be an enjoyer. It spoils everything. It's an anartha. Pride. Beware. It's a beast. You're walking along and out of the alley comes this What happened? I was just walking along. I was doing fine and this thing pounced on me and beat me up so bad. I don't know what happened. But it's not another entity. It's our own pride. That's something outside of ourselves acting on us. It's our own misuse of free will. We're not directing our attention towards the Supreme with love and devotion. But we do something that's meritorious, so we get something. And then we try to become the enjoyer of that something. It blocks our real happiness. And it happens just like with Indra. We do it over and over again. We learn our lesson, get beat up. No, I'm not going to do it again. We do it again. We do it too. And Krishna is very kind. He keeps giving us a chance. Mataji? Yeah. Are you confused about observing what? I didn't say just observing. We use things. We're active. We're not passive. If there is some success in our spiritual practice, that's the mercy of the Lord, and the mercy of the Lord is to be used. If we're properly situated, we're not the enjoyers of that. We're the servants. Our position is servant. And servant, and servant. So some. I'll give a practical example. Prabhupada was sent to America, sent to the West, to give the message of pure devotion to the English-speaking parts of the world. Nothing happened. No success. Prabhupada's determination didn't waver. He continued with whatever Krishna facility Krishna gave. He used that. Nothing happened for a whole year. Could you do something for a whole year without any apparent response from in the success department? Nothing. He was, you read the biography, it was bad. He's a gentleman in a horrible situation, undisturbed, carrying out the order of his spiritual master. And then success started coming. He didn't ignore the success that came. He didn't become the enjoyer of that success. He continued to use that in Krishna's service. I'll tell a little story, a little Prabhupada story. I was with Prabhupada in a room packed like this with many, many devotees who for an entire year had done morning till night sacrifice of trying to distribute his books. So our GBC, our authority, made the arrangement that we could all go to see Srila Prabhupada together. He went to Mayapur. And I didn't know that this was happening until we got there. But I was sitting right in front, right at the corner of the desk, and Prabhupada is like as close as I am to the deities. Prabhupada is there, and I'm right here. And somebody, our leader, put a big stack of bills, $100 bills, a tall stack of bills. I found out later it was $25,000 as a gift to Prabhupada. And I watched Prabhupada. I watched his eyes. I watched his body language. He didn't even indicate in any manner whatsoever it was even there. It could have been not there. He was not the enjoyer of that. At the very end of the darshan, he turned. He wasn't unconscious of it. He turned to his secretary, who was behind him, said, please put this in the book fund account. And then he smiled and said, do you think that we can have honey sometimes instead of sugar? It was a joke. He was saying, now we can enjoy. We're not the enjoyer, we're the servant. Whatever it is. Nothing, something, everything. Narayana Parayana. That's the verse that comes later in this canto. Narayana Paraksarge Nakutas Chanya Bibhyati Svarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apitu Yarta Darshanam. One sees the same. Svarga, Naraka. Or liberation. As long as I can serve the Supreme Lord, I can be here, there, or anywhere. I can have or not have, I can be in any situation. As long as I can serve, that's Narayana Parayana. So spiritual success doesn't deviate me. No spiritual success doesn't deviate me. Opulence doesn't deviate me. Lack of opulence, the opposite, doesn't deviate me. Indifferent to duality. When there is some opulence, it's used in Krishna service. It's not indifference, it's service. Yes.
When there is pride in the heart, whenever we are trying to become humble again and again, we are pulled back to pride.
Yeah.
Trying to become humble.
Can you relate with that? Go ahead. What's your question?
So, how to always be humble?
Narayana Parayana. And how do you become Narayana Parayana? Associating with one who is like that, in the proper mood, just like Navyovana's question before. Remember his question? The method is there. We may not know a Narayana Parayana, but if we can find such person, we should know what to do when we find them. Tadvidhi pranipatena. You know the verse? That's what we should do. And I've been explaining, we should be vigilant that we're going to get knocked off course by pride. You're driving in a car, you've taken driver lessons, you know how to drive a car. But you know that there's some people that are not very careful operators of cars, so you have to be a little on the careful. They call it defensive driving. So in this case, the defense is against our own pride tendency. You should know that it's there. Just waiting to jump out of the Italian. Jump on us and beat us up. It happened again. What happened? I was being attentive. I'm just going along. I was being really attentive. I was chanting and doing my sadhana, and then pow! But it wasn't just like that. We were inattentive. It doesn't happen unless our submission slackens. Our inquisitiveness slackens. Our respect slackens. We're inviting. Prabhupada once explained like this, very vivid. He said, it's not that we have to invite Maya. I've done some very nice service for some time. I've been very, very conscientious for some time. Now I think I need a little break. A little variety. And some time passes, and then we say, maybe I could spend a little time with Maya. Prabhupada said, no. As soon as you slacken, immediately Maya is there, engaging you. Immediately. Just like, he gave the example, just like you're facing the sun, and you turn your attention away from the sun. Immediately there's shadow. It's not, I think I'd like a shadow, please. Immediately the shadow's there. Slacken in this attentiveness, the attentive application. Tadidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Slacken in that. Immediately, there's Maya. Come and enjoy. And we're saying, yes, a little variety, a little enjoyment, in modest amounts. Pride comes in, and we're down the tubes again. So how to avoid that? Be attentive. And have the protection of spiritual strength. On both sides. Accepting anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjana. I think we'll end. Thank you very, very much.